Good players want to be coached. Great players want to be coached hard. So we coach them hard, and we still instill a lot of positivity and belief into them.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we are joined by Jabari Trotter, the assistant coach and recruiting coordinator for Dartmouth College. A Dartmouth alum, Trotter first made his mark as a standout player for the Big Green before taking his talents overseas to play professionally in Dublin, Ireland. During his time abroad, he also coached the U17 girls basketball team and led the Lady Heraldites of the Ireland Division II Women's League. Upon returning to the U.S., he joined Phillips Exeter Academy, where he served in admissions and as an assistant coach, helping young athletes reach their academic and athletic potential. Trotter went on to hold key assistant coaching roles at Lehigh University and the University of Hawaii before returning to his alma mater at Dartmouth. Known for his leadership, energy, and commitment to player development, he continues to make a lasting impact within the Ivy League. In this episode, we talk about how he grew in the ranks to land his first Division I coaching position, some duties assistant coaches can do to help their head coach on the bench in-game, and Coach Trotter's approach to networking as a coach in today's basketball landscape. Please welcome to the podcast, Jabari Trotter.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. Welcome back, coaches, and thanks everyone for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Your host, as always, Alan Major, Doug Caputo, here today. We're graced to be able to have the opportunity to chop it up with the assistant coach and recruiting coordinator over at, you see the D on his chest, if you don't, Dartmouth College, Coach Jabari Trotter. Coach Trotter, welcome to the podcast. What's going on?
I appreciate you guys for having me, man. I've been listening to you guys for a little bit now, and I know you do great work, and it's awesome what you guys do for the young coaches out there, and excited to be on. Appreciate it.
No, you got it, man. Thank you.
We're excited. One, of course, I know we say this for a handful of people, but not everybody has unique background. You definitely, and there's a little bit I can resonate with your background too that we'll get into here shortly, but just going from, I know you played at Dartmouth. So one, that's home for you right there, which is a great opportunity. Yes, sir. Then you go overseas, Dublin, Ireland. And then I saw something that you were able to coach a U17 girls basketball team, the Lady Heraldites over there over in Ireland, Division II Women's League. Also coached at Phillips Exeter Academy. And where I resonate with it is working in admissions as an assistant coach. So that's something like that right there says a lot about you growing in the profession, just going from coaching a U17 team, coaching a Division II Women's League, being over at an academy and in admissions as well. So first things first, just before we go into where you're at now, getting into that admissions and coaching youth, was there a moment when you're like, this is what I want to do, or was coaching on the mind and that was the first avenue you took?
Yeah, I think being a point guard, combo guard my entire life, and specifically at Dartmouth, I just saw the game a little bit differently. I wasn't the most athletic cat out there, but the scouts really resonated with me. The film really resonated with me. I was a hard-nosed, tough defender. I just loved learning about the game. And when I got a chance to go over to Dublin, Ireland, and not only play and get my master's, but there's flyers in the local pubs out there about coaching, I said, I got the time. Let's do it. Let's get it, right? And there's nothing more challenging than coaching 17, 16-year-old girls or professional women's league Division II. But I cut my teeth on that and got going with that. But I think the moment for me when I got my first Division I college experience. I was at Lehigh. I was the director of ops, right? And then the rule was pretty clear. You can't be on the court. You can't do anything with player development. It's all administrative. So I got to see the ins and outs. I had just finished playing, and I got to see all the ins and outs of what goes behind the scenes of a student athlete's experience. Shout out to Dr. Brett Reed for giving me that opportunity. And we had a great season, had some ups, had some downs, but our last 9 games of the regular season, we're pulling off wins, 9-game winning streak. We go to the Patriot League tournament. We win the first 2 games. And so now we're in the Patriot League championship, right? At home, full arena. and we're playing Holy Cross, the number 9 seed. And this is back in 2015, 2016, Bill Carmody. They rip through the Patriot League tournament playing a 1-3-1 zone. Those dudes didn't play one possession, 1-3-1 zone all regular season, and they pull it out for the Patriot League tournament, and they just go right through the league. So we felt like we prepped for it. We felt really good about it. We scored 14 points in the first half. Could not buy a bucket. Halftime, made some adjustments, scored 42 in the second half, and we're down 3 going into the last possession of the second half. We get 4 opportunities, brick, offensive rebound, kick out, 3, brick, offensive rebound, 4 times, miss all of them. I'm watching Holy Cross celebrate on our home court in front of a full house. They're on their way to the NCAA tournament, and I'm in my first year, and I'm like, man, it was so close, and I'm in the coach's offices, and I have all sorts of emotions, right? I'm mad. I'm frustrated. I'm disappointed. I feel for our guys. I'm just so heartbroken, especially our seniors. I go find my way home somehow that night and sleep for about 2 hours. It's just so hard to get to sleep. And I wake up and I feel invigorated. I feel ready to go. Like, I got 364 more days to try to chase this moment and chase this opportunity again. And I'm like, man, what is wrong with me? I should be like heartbroken. I should be in bed for at least a couple of days, but I felt ready to go. And whatever I got to do to be a piece of that puzzle to get back to that moment. And that's right there is when I'm like, wow, I can do this for the rest of my life. That chasing that moment, chasing that opportunity, that feeling, even in a loss, even in a heartbreaking loss, if I'm good with that, then I'm good with anything and everything else that comes. And then you fast forward to now, and I've had a lot of opportunities, there's been some losses, but there's been some unbelievable wins, right? Like when I was at Hawaii, we beat Utah at a neutral game site. We beat Colorado at home. We beat Rhode Island at home. I come back to Dartmouth in 2021, and we beat Georgetown at Georgetown. Pat Ewing, Earl Grand in BC at BC last year. And then we pushed that into first Ivy League tournament berth ever, historic season, coaching staff of the year. And so my point is, those moments right there, it's not all about the accolades, it's about the journey and the process. And that right there is what got me hooked. And I'm never turning back. No offense to the 9-to-5 guys in the office, but that ain't me. I'd rather go 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. every single day, Monday through Sunday, and let's get it.
No doubt, man. Nah, you couldn't have said it better. That's that moment you had in the Patriot League tournament, that's called being fully infected. Yeah, somebody with COVID coughs on you, you know it's coming. But technically, in that stretch, that's when you know that. And obviously, Coach Reed, another Rising Coaches podcast alum. Big shout out to Coach Reed. He was on.
Absolutely. He's a
phenomenal job. Phenomenal human being, first and foremost. Was the way that you were coached when you were younger, as you look back now, was there somebody that kind of triggered that, or somebody that inspired that, or somebody that said it to you when you were still playing? Because it sounds like, and me and Doug laugh about this all the time, typically former players, they either know that they want to get in coaching, like Deshaun Butler with the Celtics was on a few weeks ago, like his dad coached him, like never a doubt. Yeah. Then you got other people come on and say, man, I never wanted to get into coaching whatsoever. From here to planet Pluto, interest. And coaching, right. And then they end up doing it anyway. Right. It sounds like you were pretty dialed in on it, but was there somebody along the way that planted that seed or said something, or just the way you were coached coming up that you're like, okay, I want to be like him?
Yeah, I've had a lot of mentors. I've had 4 or 5 really important guys in my coaching journey and my coaching process. All the head coaches I've worked for, you talked about Brett Reed, Aron Ganot at Hawaii, Dave McLaughlin at Dartmouth, gave him my first opportunity to be an assistant coach back in 2016, 2018. And then I came back in 21 and come on, he gave me an opportunity to coach my alma mater. It doesn't really get much better than that. I've gone through the AU ranks a little bit as well. Robert Eichhardt, head of BTI, that's my guy. And we've actually been really close. I played for BTI. My younger brother played for BTI. My mother taught SAT classes for BTI. I've coached for BTI. So Robert Eichhardt's definitely a huge one. Jay Tilton at Exeter. But I'll be honest with you, man, my mother is probably the biggest influence for me. She just retired. Shout out, Mom. Congratulations
for
that. 35 plus years as a teacher. Finished up as the head of the math department at Sierra Canyon. And she's always valued getting to know her students, on a personal level, and thought that that's the best way to change the world is to educate the youth and be there and mentor them and be a leader for them. And I look, I'm not smart like my mom. I know I went to Dartmouth, but I'm not smart like my mom, right? So it's math wasn't my cup of tea, but I love basketball. And I'll use that as my version of teaching the next generations. And so just those lessons that she instilled in me when I was young, she didn't play basketball at all. And when I was growing up and playing, she literally joined a mom's league just to learn more about the game, to get closer to me. And that bond right there, I'm like, wow, I can't believe the sport of basketball can do that. And that connection. And I'm just watching her. And as I grow up, just watching her teach her students and how close they are and how she's still involved with a lot of them to this day. They still write to her. They find her on Facebook. They send her texts. She goes to lunch with them. That right there, I'm chasing that right there with my student athletes. But those other mentors, as I got into coaching, helped facilitate the love that I have today. But shout out to moms, right? I'm sure everyone can talk about that in their relationship with their mother, but I got a special one.
Oh man, no, big time. You hit something there that, and I'll be honest, this is real time talk. I've been out here for 3 weeks, and what you just said about ice breaking it with the players and really getting into them. My motto since I got here is there's a story behind every jersey. And the more you learn their story, then the better you can coach them. And, but also the idea of like teaching, right? I don't know how you guys practice in terms of your tempo, or Dougie, I'm not sure, you know, what got a new head coach, but every team has the kind of a pace that they practice at. And I tried to adopt a motto here for myself: coach fast, teach slow. Love that. So like when you got to step out and make a point to the whole group, bang. So, you know, we can hit the whistle, keep it moving. Yeah. When a guy subs out, steps off the court, take your time, and then maybe go back 2-3 possessions and do the little live recap of whatever you were trying to say and make sure you get your point across when the guy's wiping off and getting some water. But being the son of a teacher, like, what a great inspiration, right? Because technically that really should be our approach first, is teaching. 100%. And I think the more we embrace that, our players will benefit 100%.
No doubt.
No doubt. The fact that, one, you had the role model to already show you, it's not necessarily about what you're teaching or anything in that regard. It's about making that relationship first. That's the biggest thing. And you already had a great segue into it. Now, did that help you with the growth in meeting those connections? Obviously, playing at Dartmouth, you had some connections over at Dartmouth, I would assume. But like those steps from Phillips Exeter to the Lehigh to Hawaii, like how did those kind of transition and come about? Main reason I ask is more just because there's obviously a lot of coaches out there who want to be able to make that jump, right? That's a huge jump to go from an academy to a Division I program. So like, how did those kind of those positions transpire?
When I was at, that's funny that you mentioned that, because all of them were based off of those relationships. So Brett Reed, he was recruiting me when he was an assistant out of high school. So I had a good relationship with him. And when I went to Phillips Exeter to do a PG year, and I ended up committing to Dartmouth, I knew the right thing to do was to reach out to all the coaches that were recruiting me. And I was so blessed to be in that position and let them know that I was going to Dartmouth. And so I called Brett and let him know that. And then fast forward 2015, he has an opening and I'm looking for a spot. And he remembers that. It's all about those relationships. And again, I'm 18 years old. I'm not doing that because I absolutely know I want to be a coach and I want to get a position with him like 9 years later. But
no 18 year old's thinking that far.
No, no one's thinking that. But I'm doing that because it's just the right thing to do. It was how I was raised, and that's just the right thing to do. And it came back full circle, and he remembers that. We had another conversation. We caught up. We were just going over what I've been up to for the last 7-8 years. And then there you go. Transpires into a job. Dave McLaughlin, didn't know him at all, but again, same deal, more connections through Dartmouth, and had a couple conversations with him, and getting an alum on staff was really big. It was really big for him, and I was just so excited to come back. But Aron Ganot at Hawaii, did not know who he was at all. He barely knew who I was, did a little bit of research, but he had two people that he really trusts, really close to him, that both recommended me for a spot, and they both didn't know each other. One of them was Dave Verbibo, who's the head coach at Harvard Westlake, so my alma mater, who actually wasn't even my high school coach. When he got the job, I just reached out to him and I just said, hey, congratulations. Let me know if you ever need anything. Harvard Westlake, go Wolverines. And so he remembers that, right? And then Josh Leffler, who's now the head coach of Loyola Maryland, just, you know, back when I was in the league at Lehigh. And both of those guys both gave him my name. And he's, shoot, I got to talk to Jabari Trotter because these guys don't even know each other and they're recommending this guy. And so we went through the interview process and then that's, and the rest is history. And I'm like, moving out to Hawaii, let's do it. You talk about those relationships. It's so important. And I think networking with coaches is one of the best things that you can do. Look, we're all competitors in between those lines and we're all going to try to give our best and try to beat each other at any given moment. But when you're outside of those lines, we all are connected from one or two things. And one of the biggest things that we have a passion, we love basketball. So let's just share and get better. There's a lot of guys out there that want to keep their circles small or keep the kind of stuff to themselves, that development to themselves. I'm just not one of those guys, man. I just love the game. And if you love the game, then I rock with you. It's that simple.
So we have a lot of common, I shouldn't say a lot, but we have a nice amount in common too, because the fact that you said you were getting recruited, what was it, to Lehigh and then end up like turning it down, going to Dartmouth, very similar story, especially like, I was getting recruited to my first college position that I worked at, turned it down, went to a different school. Guy called me up after and said, hey, here's a position. It's just like, you never know, especially from the coaching perspective, calling the player. I've heard when coaches, like a player calls a coach and says, hey, I'm not coming to your school. I've heard horror stories. People would cuss him out or something like that. And it's like, as soon as you burn that bridge, that's one kid that you're never going to talk to again. So that's 100%. One thing that I've learned is when, and I shouldn't say I've done it before, but like you learn to once a kid takes, I've heard kids say before, you know what, hey, I changed my mind after, and then end up coming to somebody later on. So it's like you never want to burn that bridge. And then to your point, fast forward, you got a job out of it. Your first job, one of your first jobs, I should say.
Yeah, no, exactly.
So it's like you never want to burn that bridge from the coaching perspective or from the player perspective. Right. That's great.
Transfer portal keeps you relevant to that right now. But even back then, you're absolutely right. You just never want to burn those bridges. And I remember, trust me, I remember the kids that never called when they said they were going to another school or shot you that quick 3-4 word text. And I remember the guys that called me and talked about the relationship and the recruiting process. But hey, we're going to go, this is life. You're going to make decisions like that. And I respect those kids that do. And I remember those kids. And some of them are probably going to end up being coaches because I remember recruiting them and they were leaders. And that's one of the reasons why we recruited them, because they loved the game. And I'm going to remember that. That's just, it comes full circle. You said it.
Yeah, no doubt. You said something else too. That's great. Like, part of networking is just like not trying to network. Right. I know that's a complete opposite of what I just said there, but honestly, it really is, right? Like when you're just doing things the right way, communicating the right way, tying up a loose end, calling to say, hey, thanks, coach, didn't get the job. Thanks for thinking about me. Absolutely. Keep me in mind if something never goes down. We all know what it looks like when it's the right way.
Right.
And that's honestly, that's the essence of what networking is. Cause sometimes that word takes a lot of forms and sometimes it's not too pretty. Maybe at the Final Four in the convention center, it doesn't look too pretty sometimes because it's a logo convention when it's a logo size up, you know, who's that guy? Somebody's talking. I'm talking to Doug and then you're walking over Doug's shoulder. I'm looking at you walking by seeing what your logo is and while I'm still trying to talk to Doug. It's like, hold on, what are we doing here? Versus everything that we're just talking about. So hopefully what people pull from what you're saying is if you're just intentional about building relationships the right way, you are networking.
Yeah.
And you're not even trying to.
Right.
So
opportunity to find you.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. And there's one thing real quick that I'd say I learned this in a sales position is your most important client is the one sitting in front of you. So for your instance, when you're talking to somebody, your most important person is that person, especially if you're at a way to connect. Now, which actually I guess leads me into a question. What do you feel like now in modern day? I feel like it's harder to connect to people because there's 1,000 ways to do it. And I know that's contradictory, but what do you feel is like the best way to connect and meet new people? Because coaching clinics are obviously a thing. Those are probably a great way, but camps are a little more limited because they don't necessarily run as many camps. Yeah. Any networking, recruiting, what do you feel like, at least for you personally, what are some of the best ways that, you know, yourself or just other coaches you heard is a good way to stay and meet other coaches?
Yeah. Working for Dave McLaughlin, the head coach here at Dartmouth, it's been amazing because he's all about obviously winning at a high level, developing our guys, but he loves developing his staff as well. And so when we go on the road and we recruit, he's always picking our brain on like, all right, what else is going on in that city? Maybe one night you can get to a convention or some type of talk, or you can meet this alum, or you can meet with this college coach, ask if you can go to a practice, ask if you can go to an NBA workout, things like that. When I'm on the road and I'm watching AU games, I like to focus on the game. Don't get me wrong, but I'm not going to be a robot there with just my notepad and my notes. And I'm having conversations, and we could talk about anything. We could talk about offense and defensive schemes. We could talk about their program, how they were the last couple of years, what they're excited to change. I've had conversations on, hey, man, like the girlfriend and wives thing, how do I balance the life at home and the life on the road? She's getting mad at me, et cetera. You know, we could talk about anything, but I just think having conversations about having that foundation of basketball. We love basketball. And so just having conversation is such a natural way to do that. I'm a storyteller. I know there's a lot of guys out there that are storytellers. There's some funny ones. There's some ones you can't share on podcasts, but there's some good ones. And it helps connect you to these guys. And I think the biggest thing that you can do is that when you go out there, get your job done. There's no question about it. When you go recruit, make sure you have the good eval. Make sure you make the connections you're supposed to make. But don't forget about yourself and don't forget about the relationships. There's so many guys out there that have done it better than you, that have more experience, and that you can learn from.
Yeah, well said, man. Let's lift the hood on Dartmouth a little bit. I think Dougie's probably got a couple questions about it, but you mentioned Coach McLaughlin.
Yeah.
And you guys are really building something special there. Two things. One, what's his, we like to ask this question with assistants to talk about their head coaches. Number one, what's his superpower? And then part two of this question is, what's the DNA of a Dartmouth basketball player?
Yeah.
In terms of an OKG, like right, our kind of guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I don't think I've met another head coach, another coach in his position who cares about his guys as much as he does. And that's a hard thing to say because I know everyone I've worked for cares about their players. But a place like Dartmouth, where academics, the student really does come first, he cares about that part of their lives. And like I said, don't get me wrong. When we get on to the court, we're trying to develop killers, right? We're trying to develop hoopers, dudes who love the game and are trying to get better. But off the court, that's not the end, or there's more to the development of the young man. We really focus on the holistic development here. So he's trying to set up internships for them on their off terms. He's asking, hey, what are you doing in the classroom to get to know your professors? How are you building yourself up as a young man and as a future leader? He really cares about our guys' experience that way. And don't get me wrong, we care about the wins and losses here. We're extremely competitive here, but Dartmouth has so much more to offer than that. And it's funny, man, how you attack one thing is how you attack everything. He always talks about that. So if you attack your internship, you attack your professional development, you attack the weight room, you attack the training room in one way, which is with passion and hard, you were going to attack the court that way too. And our guys really resonate with that, and they love that about him. And he's just genuinely himself. And then when it comes to that hoop, man, that guy knows X's and O's better than anyone I've met. But he's all about the film. He's all about getting our guys better. And he's all about just the lessons that can be applied to on and off the court. We have an acronym here, Be a Pro. Be a belief, excellence, accountability, positivity, relationships, and ownership. And that thing is plastered everywhere in our program. It's in our team room. It's in our locker room. It's on the court. It's on every single practice plan. And we're always talking about you can be a pro and those concepts with any and everything that you do. And our guys really resonate with that.
Yeah, no, that's, I love it. I love it.
And how much of that on a daily basis does he live off of too? Because I know that's the one thing we always say is, as a head coach, if you're going to preach it, you have to be able to do it as well. You have to be able to live it. So from the coaching staff, how much have you noticed since you started working there that it starts to trickle into you, your attitude? Like, I don't know how you were before, but like how it starts to trickle and you change your mindset a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the belief and the positivity is something that we see every single day. We coach them hard. His motto has always been good players want to be coached. Great players want to be coached hard. So we coach them hard, but we still instill a lot of positivity and belief into them. We're able to coach them hard because we have great relationships with them. So they know I can get into a guy on the court. I can rip him, man. You're not doing what you need to do defensively. You're not being as tough as we need you to be. And then when we come off the court, we're making jokes. I'm asking about his family. He's talking to me about my girl, whatever it is. We're just going back and forth. We're having a good time because they know, because the relationship is there. The foundation is there. He knows I'm not like actually mad at him or I hate him or anything like that. He understands the relationship and that he understands that a great player needs to be coached hard. Ownership and accountability, right? Like these guys, we let them own their process and we have a player-led team. And so as long as they commit to the foundation and they commit to the non-negotiables, we will let them own their process of wanting to get better. That started in the recruiting process. We only bring in guys that really love the game and have a passion for the game and want to get better and want to get coached hard. But then once they get here, we show them the foundation. We show them what makes our program tick. And then we let them run with it. And that came to fruition last year. We had a lot of success. And so that was awesome to see.
Yeah. No, guys that love the game, man. It's amazing the number of conversations that you're allowed to have or that you get to have because they love the game.
Right.
And the number of conversations you don't have to have if they love the game.
Player left.
Yep. Yeah. Those guys, man, they bring just a little something different. And it's hard to write a 500-page paper on what it looks like.
Yeah.
But, man, do you know it when you see it?
It's a feeling. It's a look.
Yeah.
In timeouts during a game, the coaches will huddle and we'll talk about something for the first 10 or 15 seconds. And then I'll go over and I'll start talking defense. And I'm looking at our guys, I'm looking at them in the eye. And I'm like, you know what? Y'all got it. There's nothing else that needs to be said. Y'all got it. We'll go on. Yeah. I know, run. You know what I mean? It's just that. But I can trust them. I can trust our captains there because I know they love this. They love
no
it.
No doubt. No doubt.
So, you just talked about being in a game. And this is something that I always like to ask, just really whenever I think about it, but more, do you have any specific duties? Now, obviously, I'm sure as an assistant, you have, hey, this is your scout or this is your scout. And there's certain games where you have to specifically be more vocal for. But we'll say it's a game that's not your scout. Is there any duties that you typically have to do as an assistant? Because I know me and Alan, I forget when it was, but we were asked a question at one point and somebody asked, as a head coach, what are some duties that you can assign your assistants on the bench just to give them some extra things? Yeah. Is there any duties that you have or any assistants, or not even necessarily in this position, but in previous positions that you felt were beneficial for a head coach to appoint to their assistants during a game to pay attention to?
A couple of things. Actually, one of the most interesting things we did last year is we actually changed how we did scouts. Usually, like you said, a coach would have this scout and then another coach would have the next scout and the next guy and keep going every third.
Rotation.
We have coordinators here, so I focus on the defense. I actually do the defense for every single scout. That's what I did last year. Okay. And that was a lot of work, but it kept the message consistent. It kept the vocabulary that I was using consistent. And it allowed the guys to buy in at an even deeper level. But yeah, I'll be responsible for the defense and the coverages and the adjustments. I think the big thing that Coach Mack is looking for from me is the pulse of the team and really, really getting to know the guys and having that relationship. I've been here for long enough now that I've been through a couple full recruiting cycles, 4 years, 5 years, where I know every single one of these guys. I had a hand in recruiting every single one of them, and just having the pulse of the guys, knowing when they have a little bit more left in the tank, know when they're a little bit off and they're thinking about some other things and I got to lock them back in, right? So I always get that 5 to 10 seconds before he comes into the huddle on timeouts to really talk about that. And that's where I get that. I'm looking at him. I'm like, oh, he's ready. Sometimes I'm looking at him like, oh, he's not ready.
Yeah.
But I think my job as the defensive guy and the first assistant recruiting coordinator is just to keep these guys positive, but to take a load off of Coach Mack's shoulders. Let him pour himself into the moment, pour himself into what we need, whether it's offensive, defensive, whatever it may be, scout personnel wise, but it's just having a pulse on the guys. So I just think I'm just trying to make his job easier. But of course, adjustments. I could throw out a defensive coverage there and a scout there. And then we got really smart guys in this league and they throw something different. I'm like, we haven't prepared for that. So I got to come up with something on the fly for that. And in those moments, no matter how prepared I am, but just really, like I said, just taking the load off of his shoulders and making sure he can really pour himself into the moment. I think that really helps him a lot.
I like the fact that having although I know you're not the offensive or defensive coordinator, but I kind of like that idea because it's essentially like a football team. And as you said, you get the message. It's typically clear. It's always along the same line. So it's not hearing Coach Trotter say one thing and then this coach saying a different thing the next game. And it's like you got completely different messages and completely different voices. So I actually, I feel like that was always something when I played in college, that was something that my coaches always did. Now, obviously, everybody has a say in it, but it's you get to hear one person's voice on it. You knew during a timeout or something, you knew who to look at. So I think I like the consistency of that. That is a good, I personally believe it's a great idea.
Yeah, and Aaron Gannat said this to me at Hawaii, and they've obviously been really good for a lot of years now, but he said, you got to be the head coach of your own responsibilities, but you still got to know what's going on with everyone else. So just because I'm the defensive guy doesn't mean I can just take a break and not know what we're doing offensively. I got to know all of that. Obviously, I'm focusing on, and that I'm the guy's resource when it comes to the defense, but our offensive guy needs to know what we're doing defensively. He needs to know a couple. He needs to know everything that goes into that. And I've always loved how he said that. I think that's great. And I think it's also, I think it's humble. I think it's a good sense of humility there, because you can't be just elite at every single thing. So you got to surround yourself with people who are really good at some of the areas of improvement that you have, so you can get better there, and then allow you to be really good at the things you're elite at. I think that's so important.
No doubt, man. For sure.
I think it's... Right. I was just going to say, especially for me now, when I see 10 moving parts and I see the ball moving, so you got 11 things moving at the same time, like it's difficult to be able to lock in and be like, hey, there's times where the ball go down the floor, you're on offense and you're trying to watch the offensive action, but then you're also trying to see where they're lacking on defense. So the next possession down, it's so hard to see 11 moving parts. And then ball's coming back so quick that it's like you don't really get a grip. And then by the time it's back, you're like, oh, crap. I don't know if that's just me. You see so much moving stuff that you're trying to lock in on one.
No, but I think to his point, no, that does happen. But absolutely. I think when one guy is locked, you know, when you know what you're locked in on, sometimes it actually helps you see other things.
Correct.
Yeah. Because you're locked in on that one thing.
Yeah.
For him, like Jabari, for you defensively, if you every time a shot goes up, who are the two guys back? Or whatever it is. And you just go through your fundies on that side of the ball. How's our containment looking, whether it's in space or in pick and rolls?
Right.
Ball's on one side of the floor. What's our positioning look like? Is our low man talking and alert? How are our baseline pulls? Are we early? Are we late? How's our recoveries? Are we sound on recovery with live stunts? Or are we allowing that second penetration? So when you look at all the things defensively that you're looking at, then you're actually able to help your own team offensively.
Exactly.
Because you're watching the defense.
Right.
And then you're able to see, okay, they're really hurting us with this right now, but this is good for us offensively right? In practice. So it's kind of, I think, just kind of locking in on that one thing, like you said. And I've had a chance to do that, what you're talking about before, is it is a lot of work. You're on every game.
Every day.
But you also start to see, over the course of a season, and if you do it multiple seasons, people can only run or really only run so many things. They can have a lot of things in, but they're going to come back to doing what they do. And then that kind of helps you build a foundation when you're getting the scouting and game prep and things like that.
That's why I love basketball, man. It's the offense, defense at the same time. I'm biased, but it's the greatest sport in the world. But no, I won't tell, man. Hey, look, I'm with you, though, and I felt like that before. And I'll tell you, nothing gets me there faster than being a ref in practice. And I got to watch the defense, and I got to make calls and do all this stuff. I might be the worst ref in the country. You guys will let me know about that every single practice. It's really hard. But Alan, like you're saying, you get used to it and you see it, and it's not like you're going to miss a couple of things. And that's why everyone else on the bench has the responsibilities, but their major responsibility is to watch everything. And so you might miss one or two things, and then it's no competition. We're all on the same page. So they're going to lean over to me and be like, hey, did you see that? What do you think about this or doing that? Yeah, I didn't, but that's perfect. Yeah, that's absolutely what we need right now at this moment. I think with how we did scouts last year and how synergized our staff was, we've had synergized staffs over the years, but I thought last year, especially employing a new offense like we did and really buckling down defensively, being the number one defense in the league, I thought our staff is extremely synergized on that common goal. No one's coaching for credit. No one's recruiting for credit. We just wanted to get it done, and I thought we did it at a pretty high level last year.
No, I like you just said two words. One was, or you said a player was talking to you, like, essentially, did you see that? And you're like, I didn't. That's the one thing. I know we talked about this on a previous pod, but just one of those things as a coach, when somebody asks you, hey, did you see this? Like, I had it the other day in practice. Somebody came over to me and they're like, so I want to ask you about this. And I was like, I'll be honest with you, I didn't see it. Walk me through it. Right. Because I feel like that as a young coach is the one thing that everybody wants to prove their worth.
There you go.
I'll be the first one to say when I was – I'm still, I guess, I like to still think I'm a young coach. But, like, before, years ago, I would be like, oh, yeah, and you try to say something, and then you realize you're just stumbling on your words. And you didn't actually see it, but you want to act like you know what you're talking about. Now it's like you realize don't do that, because now you're going to be completely putting them in a mix, and it's and then you can lose some credibility with that too.
Yeah.
No, I didn't see it. Walk me through it, and then walk through the whole situation. I'm glad you said that.
Yeah, talking about scouts, yeah, I mean, my younger self – especially when you're young and you're trying to prove yourself. And like you said, you're trying to show to everyone what your head coach, your coworkers, the other assistants, your players, you're trying to prove to them how much. And so when I was younger, I'll admit it, man, I tried to do scouts and I put in so much time into scouts to try to show what I know. And now it's not about that, because you know what? I don't play. I'm not out there executing. So some of the scouts, like maybe we need 10 more hours of film watching to really break down, to help the guys not be so confused and really be elite at whatever we're trying to do, the game plan. Some scouts, we got to simplify this thing, because I got to put myself in their shoes and what they're getting from me. And we got to simplify this thing so they can focus on, maybe it's an offensive game plan type of scout this time. Maybe it's the personnel is more important than what they're running, right? And so I think getting out of your own way with that was one of the biggest things that I adjusted to. And now to the point where, like, all it's about is pouring into the guys and making sure they have all the information they need to go out and do their thing. That's a trust in recruiting, that we're recruiting the right guys and these guys are talented, but I don't want to clog their mind, right? There's no analysis by paralysis for us, paralysis by analysis for us. I think it's just letting them go out and do their best every single game. And because we got some dudes, but it's not about what I know. It's about what they can execute and what they know. That's all that these days. And I've taken a huge step. That development right there for them is actually, ironically, development for me. So it actually worked out both ways. And I think the guys have really, I think they've really attached themselves to that.
Yeah, for sure. No, that's a fact, man. The more you give them, the slower their feet get, right? Right,
exactly.
And that less is more approach. The players definitely appreciate that. And guys, I think now more than ever, you know, but I noticed that with some of our guys, I think they play so much more basketball earlier at a younger age.
Okay.
And I'm not saying everybody's a savant. I'm like, you can't go that far, but guys have more of a feel and an understanding of basketball more than ever. So just for that reason, I think the small chunks and the shorter sound bites are more helpful, just to calculate something and then boom, let's go.
Yeah, no doubt. 10 years ago, I'm talking to a point guards and recruiting guards, and they're like, yeah, I should have gotten up more shots. These, like, the last 2 or 3 years, I'm talking to a point guard, I'm like, what did you see out there? And he's going through ball screen reads. I'm like, geez, man. Like,
right.
I wish I saw the game like that back then. We always talk about it. If I could take what I know now as a coach and put it in my body when I was a little bit younger and I was still playing, how good of a player I would have been. But basketball is gotten so elite. It's the specialization of it is happening younger and younger. And so there's some true talent out there. But I think these guys are still looking for that leadership, you know, that mentorship. And they're still kids at the end of the day. They're still young men at the end of the day. So they're still looking for that development to be great men down the line, whether it's on the court or off the court. But yeah, no, it's crazy. It's crazy. We're done.
So before we get to the final question, I wanted to ask one thing, because we spoke with a friend of mine. He's the head coach over Rose Holman Institute of Technology. So, all right, some really smart people. We had him on here at one point, and I'm sure you can relate to this. And he made a comment at one point and said, sometimes when the smarter the kids, the less you have to break it down. The less you have to break it down, because the more you overanalyze it, the more they're so smart, they might overthink things.
Right.
So do you feel like that's something that you might see? Being especially in an Ivy League?
Yeah. I think we have extremely bright student athletes here for sure. I think to get to this level off the court, you have to look at things differently. Your time management has to be incredible. You have to open up your world to a bunch of different things that some student athletes probably couldn't handle. And so I think I said the way they approach one thing, they approach everything. And that's good for most things. But sometimes with basketball, it's such a feel game. And there's so many feel moments that if you give them too much, then yes, they're analyzing and they're processing, and like the play has already passed them. It's like that play, or that play never even happened in the game, right? He's waiting for this and it never actually even happened. So I think the biggest thing for us is just like to keep it positive and give that belief of your natural instincts are going to take over. We're going to give you this framework, but we want you guys to play. There is a reason why you are here. 13, 14, 15 slots, but we get hundreds and hundreds of kids that are very interested at this level, but you are here for a very specific reason. So don't overthink. Just play the game that you love and play it with our foundation. You're going to be good. But absolutely, the smarter that they get, sometimes they overthink things and it's, hold on, man, just relax, relax. It's all good. You're going to be okay. And yeah, like I said, it's that paralysis by analysis thing. But no, your guy's absolutely right. So sometimes we try to dumb it down for them because sometimes they could be a little too smart for their own good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think one more thing before Dougie lands a plane here. I think when you have guys like at an Ivy League, and I was talking to Tommy Amaker about this one time, and I said, what's the biggest challenge maybe that you face? And he said, you know what? We don't have to motivate our guys. The fact that our guys are here on this campus, they're already highly motivated individuals, much like yours there.
Yeah.
So you don't really have to talk about being at practice on time or just being motivated to do things. But Tommy said, it's interesting. I'm wondering if you feel this way as well. He said, my challenge is I have to find ways to inspire them. He said, so they're already motivated. So inspiration is more the thing. And he said, it might be a clip from an Obama speech. It could be a quote from a book.
Yeah.
It could be a snippet from a movie scene right before practice on the, whatever that is. But do you find that's the same thing in terms of the motivation versus inspiration balance?
Yeah, there's some similar concepts there. I would say Dave does a great job of, we have really, like you said, motivated guys. We have really talented guys, and sometimes they need help doing or getting opportunities in other ways outside of basketball and even with basketball, right? Sometimes they don't know that they're going to be really great at this part of basketball. They're going to be really great at reading that ball screen or be really great at talking and being a leader, right? So Dave is really big on early in the process, kind of finding those leaders and then developing them throughout their years. But also everyone has a chance to be a leader. The entire class is going to have a chance to be a leader now, whether that turns into a captain or whatever that may be. But yeah, I think it's inspiration to do more than just basketball. And I think they know that when they come to Dartmouth, the opportunities are there, but making the guys comfortable so they can put themselves out there and learn about something else, do something else. Know that basketball is not the end all be all, right? And we talk about it here. It's 4 for 40, 4 years at Dartmouth is going to prepare you for the next 40 years of your life. We pepper them with that in the recruiting process while they're here, everything. So the motivation to be great is there. The inspiration, we'll help you with that. That's our job. We'll help you with that. And we'll let you know, hey, I know it doesn't seem like much now, but I'm telling you, this is going to help you down the line. And they trust us. They trust us to engage with that. So I think Tommy's right. And I think all the head coaches in the Ivy League have their version of that. And Dave definitely has his version of that in terms of leadership, servant leadership, and professional development. We're trying to make these guys better young men and men when they graduate from here. They'll be able to tackle all walks of life.
Perfect. Coach, we always like to just throw in the final question. And really, just if we were to take you back to, I know you're a young coach still in the profession and still learning, still growing as well, but just taking you back to that first coaching position or just being earlier in your profession, knowing what you know now, is there any advice that you would share with your younger self, and what would that advice be?
Yeah, I think stay hungry, stay humble, keep competing at a really high level, and understand that you don't got to do it yourself. And I talked about it with the scouts, but I was so competitive when I was young. I wouldn't say it was hard for me to accept help, but I was stubborn. You talk to Ron Gannatz, the first thing he's going to say is how stubborn I was. But I was talented, but I was stubborn. And I think if I can go back and talk to myself, it's just accept help and learn about the thing that you love the most in this world outside of family and friends is basketball, and keep an open mind when it comes to that. I learned that at Dartmouth from a professional standpoint. And I thought that was great. But then you come into the coaching ranks and you just see all these guys, right? Coach K, Coach Izzo, Coach South, and what they're doing, NBA or college, and how good they are. And you hear all these stories about what they had to do to get there and things like that. And the stories are great, but in between the lines, the guys that are great did so many things and got so much help from others to get there as well. But sometimes you don't hear that. You're a young guy and you're just hearing the sexy details of, oh, wow, he slept in the office for 2 years or whatever that situation is. But there was so much, they had so much help along the way. Nobody can get to a high level without help. So I think to the younger me or to younger coaches out there, just accept that help. It's okay to fail. You need to fail. Learn from that. Stay hungry. Stay humble. Love the game.
Couldn't say any better than that, man.
I was going to say, as soon as you said it's good to fail, it made me think. My dad just sent me this thing on Instagram the other day, and it was Derek Jeter giving a speech. I don't know if you saw it recently, but he was giving a speech, and he was saying, I failed, I think it was 59 times in his first as a shortstop. He's like, I failed 59 times.
Right.
And he goes, I don't know for you baseball fans, but that's a lot of times I failed. And he goes, Now I'm in the Hall of Fame. Long story short, I failed so many times in my rookie career that now I'm in the Hall of Fame, but you have to learn. So that's a perfect way to wrap it up.
Love it.
Great.
See you guys, man. This was awesome.
No, you've shared a lot of nuggets. This is absolutely phenomenal. And we always say, everybody always does a great job on these, but that was absolutely phenomenal. I truly mean that. That all aside, too, thank you very much for we always appreciate anybody. One, I know the season's about to start revving up, at least when we recorded this. So by the time it'll be released, it'll be in season. But thank you for just taking some time to be able to not only just tell your story, but share for the other people, too, because there's a lot of people that resonate with your background, will resonate with your background and be able to learn a lot from your history so far. So thank you for being on here with us.
Appreciate that. No, I love what you guys do and what you're doing for the game and growing the game and giving an outlet for some of these young coaches to share their stories and just keep it and push it forward, man. Pay it forward. Yeah. I think that's awesome. And that's just trying to do my part with it.
Yeah, you did. That's for sure. You definitely did, man. Yeah. Nah, it's you embody what we're trying to promote on this platform. And that's a big thing with me and Doug. And I say this and probably drives people nuts when they hear it, but this pod isn't for everybody. We're not really big on the top 40, under 40 and self-promotion and none of that stuff. You know, this is about, is someone that comes on the Rising Coaches pod going to raise our profession, not raise their position. Yeah. But no, honestly, that's why we do this. If they're going to, the youth coach, you can listen to this and get something. An NBA coach could listen to this and get something. A college coach could, women's side, men's side, it doesn't matter. So what you did today made our profession better, and that's what this platform's about. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Coach Trotter. And for everybody else out there, thank you for all tuning in. Coaches, people, fans, whatever you might be, appreciate you for tuning in to us. That does it for another episode, the Rising Coaches Podcast. Alan Major, Doug Caputo, all you coaches, keep working and keep rising. We'll see you all soon.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together. We'll